During its peak in the early 1980s, the Suez Canal carried some 22,000 ships a year through the isthmus separating the Mediterranean and the Red Seas. Today, that number is down by 30%. Tankers carrying oil from the Persian Gulf north to Western Europe continue to use the waterway, as do cargo ships laden with goods from Europe for markets in Asia. The opening of the Suez Canal on November 17, 1869, fulfilled a dream that began with the Egyptian pharaohs, but it took a 19th-century French entrepreneur to make that dream come true, a disgraced and unemployed diplomat named Ferdinand de Lesseps. Author Zachary Carabel tells the story in his book, Parting the Desert, The Creation of the Suez Canal.
Part of the reason why this story is so stirring is it's a real act of a visionary. His motivation was fame. It wasn't money. It was the everlasting monument that would be associated with his name. And he really goes and pursues this almost megalomaniacally, in that he is ruthless with people who might claim credit for this other than him. And he pursues something that, at least in the early 1850s, seemed utterly unrealistic. The Suez Canal and the Isthmus of Suez was a desert region, no source of fresh water, nobody living within 100 miles of it except a number of nomadic Bedouin tribes who were uninterested in a canal, and not a lot of backing in Europe, in fact, a lot of opposition from the British. So this one person comes up with literally the impossible dream and dedicates the next 15 years of his life to making it real.
Another important character in this saga is Said Pasha, who was the ruler of Egypt. How did Lesseps convince him to cooperate? How did their partnership work?
Well, the two had been friends in the 1830s. This is one of these great stories of always be nice to people, because you never know when it's going to serve you well in the future. So Lesseps had been the consul in Egypt in the 1830s, and Said was a young, overweight prince. And his father, who was this intense, basically the creator of modern Egypt, named Muhammad Ali, hated the fact that his son was overweight, and he looked to the young de Lesseps to help his even younger son get in shape. And Lesseps, while he did sometimes help the young Said Pasha get in shape, also took pity on him and kept feeding him plates of macaroni. And when de Lesseps found himself out of a job, Said Pasha suddenly found himself the ruler of Egypt and invited de Lesseps to come and celebrate the fact that he'd become the ruler. And he spins this incredible romantic vision, and he tells the ruler of Egypt that if the ruler of Egypt supports the building of a canal, that Said Pasha's name will eclipse the pharaohs who build the pyramid, and Egypt's reputation will rise, and it will become a power to be reckoned with.
Where did the money come from?
The money came from thousands of individual investors, on the one hand, individual French investors. In a lot of ways, the Suez Canal is one of the first examples of an IPO, an international public offering of a company for an idea. It's one of the first examples of a speculative venture being funded by shares issued to individual investors. So the French were persuaded. You know, they thought the Orient was this mysterious, romantic place where passions and possibilities ran wild. The English, on the other hand, while they thought the canal, a lot of the merchants thought the canal was a good idea, the English government of Lord Palmerston was completely opposed to a canal, and the English bought no shares. So while Said ended up taking most of the shares of this company along with the French shareholders, the only problem was that from de Lesseps' perspective, it failed to be the international venture that he wanted it to be.
If the French wanted the canal to enhance trade and advance Western civilization, and the Egyptians wanted this kind of national renaissance and a renewed power in the world, weren't those two aims at odds with one another?
As it turns out, absolutely. This really was a moment of optimism. Said was a Turkish ruler of an Arab country, and they really recognized that there was a lot of competition coming from Europe, but they also believed it was possible to compete on a level playing field if they only modernized a bit, and the canal was one aspect of Egypt's modernization. And from the French perspective, as you said, it was a possibility for trade and commerce. As it turned out, the best-laid plans went quite well for the French and the French shareholders, and went quite badly for the Egyptians. But at the time, I think there was a reasonable possibility that the canal could have achieved the dreams that both Said and many Egyptians and de Lesseps and many Frenchmen held for it.
Wars have been fought over this waterway. Is it still as important as it was?
No, the canal really has begun to recede in a way that I found very bittersweet, almost depressing. But by the 1970s, during the Arab-Israeli wars, the Israelis shelled the canal cities, Port Said, Ismailia, and the city of Suez, many of which were destroyed. The canal was closed for long periods of time during the 1960s and 70s. The oil trade had to find other outlets. The oil still had to be shipped. Pipelines were built, pipelines that we're now today trying to secure in Iraq, pipelines that go across Syria. And larger tankers developed that were too big for the Suez Canal and to some degree for the Panama Canal. So all of these forces combined to shift the patterns of world trade. And in addition, the United States, which has a global reach, was never as focused as the British Empire was on the Suez Canal as a shipping access point. So for all these reasons, the canal has become less important. And while it still is Egypt's largest foreign exchange source, it still brings in nearly $2 billion a year for Egypt, its place in world trade just is no longer as central as it was.
Zachary Carabel is the author of Parting the Desert, The Creation of the Suez Canal. It's published by Knopf. He joined us from our New York bureau. Thank you very much.
Thank you.